This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Shamila. And just to say that we are going to be dedicating the rest of this half hour to revisiting the issue of the digital divide when it comes to education. We're going to be hearing later on from a non-profit organization, Souls 24/7, about how they've adjusted during the pandemic to overcome the divide with their programs. But first, looking back at even why this is an issue.
Yeah, so the digital divide essentially talks about is something we've been talking about a lot because of the pandemic and how so many people have started relying on devices and the internet to be able to access education. And if you look at statistics from the ministry last year, 40% of students nationwide don't actually have electronic devices. And even when they do, they often have to share them with their siblings. There are issues with internet access. We all remember, of course, the story of Viviona. But there are also multiple stories of children having to trek up hills, for instance, to get internet connectivity. So all of this means that there is a real issue in terms of how, in terms of bridging that gap, in terms of making technology accessible to people so that they can basically access their right to education.
And the government is trying to address this, right? We've seen them shifting, trying to make textbooks available online, pushing TV Didik, you know, just doing all sorts of things. However, we've also covered that there have been some issues there. We don't have to revisit it. But suffice to say that the execution has been uneven, and even something like 150,000 laptops under Budget 2021 for students has not come to fruition as yet, which has resulted in MPs raising funds to buy laptops, other devices. So we just want to look at not just what the government can do, but perhaps also what private organizations can do, what different groups can do to further this cause, which is where our story is headed today. But we'd like to know, what are your thoughts on the digital divide in education and what's been done so far? Do you have suggestions? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 7:12 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Shamila. We're talking about the digital divide in education. And on that, Lee Shin Ying from BFM's news desk actually spoke recently to Raj Ridvan Singh, who's the founder of Souls 24/7. They've been on our station before and they're a non-profit that aims to educate and empower communities from the B40 group through re-education programs that focus on digital proficiency, the English language and soft skills development. So here he's sharing his thoughts on the current challenges in education and what can be done to overcome this divide.
What are some of the main challenges that COVID-19 has posed to Souls 27's work in with education training? Because I presume there might have been some tweaking that had to be put in place to accommodate for online learning and lack of physical contact and classes. Yep. So has there been maybe like a change of content or repurposing done?
Yes. So the pandemic is definitely, in many ways, forced us to rethink, redesign, and re-engineer the way we deliver. So prior to the pandemic, we were training about almost 1,500 participants every single day throughout the country in our various community centers. And the moment the pandemic hit, we had to shut down all the classes because in-person classes were not permitted. And, you know, so trainings, workshops, extracurricular programs were not permitted, whether in schools, whether in community centers, or just generally in even workshops were not permitted. So what we quickly did was we realized that the only way we could continue to at least make a difference is to provide our programs online. So thankfully, we've been a Google for Education partner, and we've been pushing for digital proficiency for the last 5 years. So almost all our teachers had the ability to use Google Classroom, Google Meet, and had the, you know, the basic digital proficiency to deliver our programs online. Now, of course, you know, right up to that point, we were delivering, you know, 99% of our programs in person. And now that you have to deliver online, it's very different. What we found is pre-recorded content has little to low impact with the bottom 40%. And the classes needed to be live. So we quickly set up a platform. You know, just we put through a website, a learning platform where students could register and quickly sign up for classes and that we could deliver them live. Now, that also posed a second challenge, which is now about 30% of the work we did was with the Orang Asli communities. Now, they do not have the infrastructure such as the internet bandwidth. Many times they don't even have electricity or like direct electricity. And they definitely do not have the devices. So immediately we were extremely limited because we couldn't reach about 30% of our target market. Now, there's two things to this. So first, the beauty of going online, from being able to train 1,500 Malaysians from the bottom 40% communities, we were able now to reach 40,000 in just 10 months. So we were extremely impressed, amazed, shocked, because we had no idea that we could reach that many. Luckily, as many, many Malaysian children game, there are 7.2 million gamers. So many of the children or many of the youth were already able to use a digital device. It was native to them. So they were not in any way not comfortable with it. But secondly, there was this Orang Asli community, the bottom 5%, and there were a good 20 to 30% further of our target market that did not have either the bandwidth or a exclusive device. So the family would have a device, the father, mother, but then when you have 4 or 5 children, they wouldn't be able to share the device. So what we did for the Orang Asli community is we were lucky enough to get a small grant. We quickly got some laptops, Wi-Fi dongles with the sort of GSM SIM card, went to two of the Orang Asli's in Kampung in rural Kelantan and set up actual physical classrooms. So we would charge our laptops using the generators that were available in the village and then quickly deliver our classes online. But again, the infrastructure wasn't the greatest because we were only able to get 3G speeds in some of these villages. But at the same time, we were still able to help the Orang Asli youth to get online. So we did a pilot and we learned a lot of things. Now, as I mentioned earlier, we learned that, you know, when you deliver in person and when you deliver online, it's actually quite different. Yeah. So at the same time, you know, how do we engage the kids? Because they can just switch over to another browser. Yeah. They could just like, you know, they could switch off their camera and you would have no idea what they're doing. But at the same time, how do you keep their attention span and you keep them engaged? So what we decided to do is we needed to do actual research on what are the challenges that the bottom 40% are facing. We used it as an opportunity to redesign what we've been doing for the last 20 years, you know, and the goal was very simple, right? People always talk about, you know, help the poor get out of poverty, help them. But help them to what end? How does one define out of poverty? And so we defined it as how do you move the bottom 40% to the middle class society? So education plays a key role, but education is not just specific like an English class or, you know, a sewing class or a vocational class. It's actually, there are many, many programs that a young person will need to go through to be able to work towards getting into middle class. And so we started developing these programs. We came up with 11 different pillars and started working on what kind of content. And the beauty we found is using the power of technology, we could map it out and help the young person see that these are the things they have to go through. So very, very soon, Shiying, we will be launching our model, which we think will drastically disrupt the education system in Malaysia.
Yeah, so I think just breaking down what you've just told me, lots of things that you had to go through to kind of rethink, go back to the scratch board to, you know, think of what content is relevant to these groups of children and youth.
Yep.
In your view, how serious is this issue? Because we always hear about how, you know, these Orang Asli communities out there, these youths in kampungs, they have lack of access to internet, like you say, bandwidth, even the devices themselves, they don't have exclusive devices, not enough within the family. So is this issue as serious as it sounds?
Oh, definitely. Basically, I think it's one in every four Malaysian children that do not have access or have exclusive access to a digital device and the, you know, necessary bandwidth. So we're not just talking about Orang Asli communities, right? We're talking about 25% of our school-going children. And this is being conservative, yeah, that do not even have that fundamental tool to go online and study. And it's not just Orang Asli. This is also in the PPR flats right smack here in KL. And you would have seen, you know, a number of our politicians, you know, rushing to get laptops and tablets to their constituents. You've seen a number of nonprofits trying to refurbish computers and donate them. The government has tried to provide a bit of bandwidth to. So it's a big issue, right? Access to technology in Malaysia, which is quite shocking. When what is it? Telcos claim that 98% of the entire country is connected through 3G, 4G. You know. And yet, you know, the devices aren't there. And so, yes, every household may have a smartphone. I think it's 97% of all households have access to a smartphone. But when you have seven people, you know, father, mother, five kids, how do you share that around? Yeah. You know, and how about the bandwidth? The bandwidth is the second biggest issue. So it is a very real problem. And this third issue, which we found, so in the Orang Asli villages, and also in a lot of the bottom 40% households, they don't even have a quiet space to study. So when we were doing some of the trainings with our Orang Asli, you know, we had to battle the chickens in the background. We had to battle the babies running around and crying, you know. And these are real, like, I kid you not. And this is not like a one-off. This is a daily challenge. So again, the you know, for the middle-class society, we, you know, we have, most of our children, they would have their own room. You know, we would set up a space for them to study. But for many of the bottom 40%, when you have 5, 7, 8 people now at home, parents cannot go to work, that is not a conducive environment for a child.
For these groups, how can we, you know, make sure that these children don't get left behind in the learning progress?
Now, you have 2.5 to 3 million children that are going to school that need these devices and need this bandwidth, right? Now, the only way to address this is to get the bandwidth and the devices to them. So it's a mathematics thing, right? What is 3 million tablets going to cost? You know, and I think if we buy at volume, and I think if the government takes up this mandate that we are going to give every Malaysian child a tablet and bandwidth for all the learning things, with, you know, free bandwidth for all the learning websites, which I believe the telcos will be open to, because, you know, the infrastructure is there. And I think as a country, the amount of taxpayer money we have, we can do it if we really wanted to. Now, we also have 550,000 school teachers. Now, we need to quickly equip them with the digital proficiency skills. But even then, the teachers can play a more engaging role. So there are about 5 to 10% of amazing teachers out there, and you can see this all over Facebook, that are calling their students, contacting and trying. You know, the ministry is trying to put in some processes. But again, it's not enough because there is no clear direction, no clear leadership. How do you expect, you know, 50, 60, 70-year-olds to be able to decide and design the digital structure for schools when they themselves do not understand technology? They don't even understand how it works. You know, a lot of our teachers have been given the tools, but there's no training on what to do. How do we ensure that our schools, our teachers, and our students are digitally proficient, but most, and equally importantly, how do they have the devices should the pandemic get really bad, or should another pandemic come again? And how do we prepare and learn and not repeat the same mistakes, you know?
Do you have any thoughts on the Education Ministry's current PDP syllabus? I mean, now schools have reopened, but you know, they did try for the better half of last year that they wanted to get PDP syllabus in motion, execution, and they announced DidicTV as well for exam takers. Do you think it's kind of sufficient?
So I think using TV was a good idea, because most bottom 40% do have a TV. So I think that was a good initiative. But at the same time, many of the families have 4 to 5 children, and they are at different age groups, different levels of education. So who do you prioritize? So obviously the government's like, listen, let's prioritize those who've got exams. And I agree with that, you know, because that SPM or, you know, all those key exams are key determinants for the bottom 40% for jobs, for scholarships. Now, again, until and unless you can get the devices to every child and the teachers trained, every other solution is weak. And that's a fact that we need to accept, you know, as much as wearing a mask. It's like, you know, it's the same thing with this prevention. As much as wearing a mask and washing your hands and keeping a social distance is really important to prevent. But yet COVID is spreading. The only way to solve it is to go get the vaccine. Similarly, the only way to solve a digital proficiency gap is to get a digital device and the bandwidth to the child. And then, you know, we talk about wanting to be a developed nation, a progressive nation. Why aren't we taking this seriously? And when I say seriously, like serious leadership, seriously saying, hey, we're going to go and give devices to children. We are going to do this as a government plan. We're going to figure out a way. And then the question becomes, oh, so if every child has a little device and all the teachers have, then why do we need schools? And I'm like, a device in the school just makes the learning experience even more interactive, even more engaging. It's a great complementary tool. In fact, yeah, it's the great key tool. Like, you know, why teach a kid how to, you know, geography by maps and drawings on a piece of paper when you can use Google Earth and travel with them? Right? There are all these amazing tools and it's free. We can show kids everything out there in this beautiful, you know, videos, illustrations. There's tons and tons of content. But then we come into the second issue, which is, unfortunately, almost all of this good content is in English. And we have another issue, which is the English proficiency, you know, is extremely low. You know, 70% of our, you know, SPM leavers do not have the basic English proficiency for employability. And, you know, about over 90% of the bottom 40% have very low English proficiency. So again, we have another challenge. But with the teachers being trained and the students having the devices, that in itself will solve at least 70% of the problem, because the teachers can speak and teach in Bahasa Malaysia.
To kind of sum it up, Raj, how do you think the world of education in Malaysia has changed as a result of the pandemic? And what should the future of Malaysian education look like from here?
So I think the pandemic has forced us to realize that we need digital proficiency amongst our teachers and our students. We need to get them the devices and the bandwidth. That is not a question. But at the same time, if we can do this, we give a chance to our population to truly advance over our neighbors, because we are a small enough population, 32 million, 7 million school-going children, and only about 3 million of the children need these devices. The others, the parents, can afford it. Now, I think that the government needs strong leadership and needs to make some very bold claims and steps and actual actions in addressing this. In all honesty, from what I've seen coming out, I am not hopeful. I have not seen anything that has been impressive or empowering or inspirational come out from the Ministry of Education. I think everyone is stuck and they don't know what to do. And at the same time, they're not speaking to enough technocrats, enough people who understand this, calling and trying to talk to us. I don't see that happening enough. It's a tricky one, Xin Ying. So, and at the same time, I hope that more and more Malaysians will use this as an opportunity to find ways to support and help the bottom 40%, you know, either by getting them donating how we, you know, use devices, or even just buying and donating devices and bandwidth. I hope more and more nonprofits and NGOs will come together to find solutions, and more corporates will support this, because this is such a big need. You know, the thing is, we will survive. The thing is, we will figure this out. The problem is, how long will we take? So our mission is to try to reduce the gap as much as possible. We've got a 5-year plan internally, and we believe that, well, with the government support and leadership, we can solve this problem in less than a year or two. But internally for us as a nonprofit and also as a social enterprise as well, our mission is within the next 5 years.
That was Raj Ridvan Singh, founder of Souls 24/7, speaking to Lee Shin Ying about how the digital divide among schools and students in Malaysia can be overcome. And now we're headed to the news.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.